Good morning. You guys all right? Nice to see you. Does everybody understand my accent all right? I know I've got one. Sorry. You got one too, you guys. You also have one. Also, to set everyone at ease, there's no animals living in this. Every now and again, I get questions. There's no birds or nothing, bugs, none of that stuff. So nothing to worry about. It's great to see you guys. I'm sorry that my wife and my kids aren't here. My wife's name is Jill. And I've got these two wonderful little boys. Jed is our 8-year-old, and Wyatt is our 5-year-old. And there's just kind of been a lot of travel over the last little bit, and there's more coming up, and with them in school and all the rest, we just couldn't pull it off this time. But I promise I do have a family. I'd show a picture as proof, but I forgot to make that happen. So it is a real privilege to be with you guys. It's been about 6 years or so since I've been here last, and so... How many of you guys are new within the last 6 years? Good gracious, lots of you. Okay, it's basically like I'm brand new here, so that's fine. It is a real privilege to be here. I had a chance to be with a bunch of the guys in the church yesterday morning. We had breakfast together, and it was just an awesome time. And we were up in Alliston last night, meeting with some churches up there. Where I live is a little tiny rural small town, and it's like a little island town off North Carolina in the ocean. And so we do a lot of work with little rural, small communities. And so last night we got to go up and hang out with a bunch of Canadian, small town, rural pastors. And so that was fun in the country. Would you guys say it like that? In the country? I don't know. Whatever. So thanks, Mike. Also, in the last 6 years, Mike looks the same. So his epic head of hair has not changed a bit. I, on the other hand, have changed quite a bit. So, I love seeing the traction you guys are having with your community. I was at the park run yesterday. I'll blame it on my knee injury, but I was more park watching than park running. And it was just encouraging to see all the ways that God's using you guys as a church to be a blessing to your town. That's what all of us are hoping for. Those of us in churches like where I live and where you live, we're hoping not just to pull off good Sunday mornings, but we want to make a difference in our community. We want our community to be better because we're there, because we're loving Jesus and loving people. I'm just encouraged by what God's doing with you guys. And I hope today I can just add to that and encourage you. Also, if you're just kind of checking out Christianity, you're not yet a Christian, you just came to see what this is all about, or someone drugged you and brought you here, or whatever the case may be. I really hope that this morning will help you as well. I think it takes a lot of courage if you're not a Christian to come to a church meeting. That takes a lot of courage. And so I just want to commend you for that and really hope that this morning is helpful. It makes sense. And if you have any questions, just come grab me or Vic or anybody afterwards. We'll try to help you. So we're going to just read a few verses of a letter called 1 Peter. And it's written by this guy, Peter. Who had really blown it. He'd really messed up. He had blown it multiple times, but his ultimate was when he denied Jesus 3 times. He's pretty famous for being that guy. If someone had done that to you and you were really powerful, you would likely just roast them publicly and annihilate them in some way, shape, or form. And just right out the gates, the grace of this God that we know and serve and love is that guy who denied Jesus has letters in the Bible that he wrote. I mean, it's incredible that he's still playing a role. He's still making an impact. And so he writes this letter to a group of newer Christians who are trying to figure out, what are we supposed to do with our life? How are we supposed to live? This culture is really different and challenging. They were a minority. They were this tiny little minority. And I know that if you're here and you're a Christian, you kind of know what that feels like. In America, where I'm clearly from, based on my accent and everything else about me, we've kind of thought of ourselves like this majority, this moral majority and all this for so long, and it's really not true, and it's really unhelpful and all the rest, but it's caused a lot of problems, but our culture is rapidly changing as well, and so what does it look like to live out this Christian faith in a world that's increasingly, different to us? And so this is the purpose of the letter, and I'm going to read the first 12 verses. They'll be up on the screen, and then we're just going to talk about them. So it starts off, Peter introduces himself. He says, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who are elect exiles, and we'll talk about that and what that means, of the dispersion, and he names some, this region, Pontus and Galatia and Cappadocia and Asia and Bithynia, and according to the foreknowledge of God the Father. So you're elect exiles according to the foreknowledge of God your Father. In the sanctification of the Spirit, for obedience to Jesus Christ, for the sprinkling of his blood, and for the sprinkling of his blood. May grace and peace be multiplied to you. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to his great mercy, he has caused us to be born again into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that's imperishable, that's undefiled, that's unfading, that's kept in heaven for you, who by God's power are being guarded through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you rejoice, though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the tested genuineness of your faith, more precious than gold that perishes though it is tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor to the revelation of Jesus Christ. Though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not now see him, you believe in him and rejoice with joy that is inexpressible and filled with glory, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Concerning this salvation, the prophets who prophesied about the grace that was to be yours searched and inquired carefully, inquiring what person or time the Spirit of Christ in them was indicating when he predicted the sufferings of Christ and the subsequent glories. It was revealed to them that they were serving not themselves but you in the things that have now been announced to you through those who preached the good news or the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven, things into which angels long to look. It's a lot there, whole lot there. And if you're new to the Bible, I know that was a lot and you probably got lost. Verse 1, let's work through it and try to make it make some sense. So the first thing I'll do is just kind of like just give us a little context. You know, have you guys ever traveled outside of Canada? Anybody? Hands up. Lots of us. Whoa. Okay, that's great. This analogy might work. So when you travel to another country like I am currently doing, you're in a foreign place. And so right away, I know that you're not from where I'm from, and you know that I'm not where you're from, because we got this little accent thing, right? That's different. And this is like a little different, but there's still a lot of just things we have in common. However, you know, you can go to, you know, other places, further away places that would be even more different and you would stick out even more. You know, my first travels overseas were to like rural southern Africa. And I mean, I had just some pretty wild experiences, you know. I have come to absolutely love Africa. I don't think anyone should visit there who doesn't want to move there. It's incredible. It got into my heart, but it was really different. You know, I was in villages in Botswana and Zambia and Zimbabwe, and I was eating food that like just wasn't on the menu back where I was from, you know, and vice versa. We eat stuff that would be, you know, considered weird to other people, and so all of that stuff. It's like it was like this. Culture shock that was happening. You've probably experienced some of that in travel, you know, and so, but you kind of like, you go in knowing, hey, this is going to be a little different. They may not speak the same way I do or a different language to me. We may have to eat some things we don't really understand. You kind of go in knowing that is the point, right? When you travel to another country, you expect those things. And then when you come back home, it's like this sort of sigh of relief. Just, whew, you get to eat whatever it is that, you know, it's like your thing, where you're from, and it's like, man, finally, I'm back home. I don't have to eat that weird stuff anymore. I don't have to listen to that weird accent anymore, or whatever, you know? That's an experience that I think a lot of us can understand or have experienced personally. But what if there was no place on earth, like no place on earth, where you totally fit? Like, what if there was nowhere on earth where people sounded like you, talked like you, ate what you like to eat? What if there was nowhere on earth where that was a thing? What if every town or every country that you visited left you sticking out? I remember being in Sri Lanka. I don't know how old I was, but I was on this road and I looked, and it was like the first time, you know, for me, which was, it's a good experience. It was the first time where I was the only, like Caucasian person I could see in any direction. And it was because, you know, growing up where I grew up, you know, you can get a pretty skewed perspective on the world. And that's America's terrible at all that. But the point is that I remember looking in every direction, and I was like, man, I really, really, really stick out here, you know? I stick out right now, but I mean, I really stuck out there. In a real sense, I mean, it was clear to everyone and to me I wasn't from there, you know? So in a real sense, actually, this is what Christianity feels like. It feels like you stick out. You don't feel like anywhere you go in the world geographically is actually your home. I think the first thing to log here is that Christians, we're supposed to be strangers in what's a strange, it's a strange world. The word exiles that gets used here, it means, it's foreign residents. That's what an exile is. I'm sure you guys know that. People whose homeland is another country, but they're currently living in this country. And so they're exiles. They're from somewhere else, but they're living here currently. So the reason this is, I'm bringing this up is because it's weird that Peter calls these guys exiles, because it seems like those people were actually locals. Do you guys use that term here in Canada, locals? It seems like those people were actually from the regions that they were in, and Peter goes, you guys are exiles. And I want to just make this, I'm pretty proud of where I live. I've got our state flag tattooed here and a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, the state flower and county seal. I'm really proud of it, clearly, you know. In fact, I actually have never met people more proud of where they are than Canadians. You guys are, if you don't know this, you're obsessed. I mean, all my Canadian friends, it's like there's not a piece of clothing they own that doesn't have, you know, the maple leaf on it. So I think that's a good thing, right? I think it's a good thing. We share that in common, this pride of where we're from. And if someone like came to me, I'm born and raised in this little island town that I'm at. There's a book about our town, and my mom is a little girl and my granddad are on the cover of the book. Like, I'm from there, right? I know everybody. Everywhere I go, I know everybody. I mean, it's weird for me. I know that you're not from there because I don't know you. Like, I mean, it's that kind of place, right? It would be not just weird. It would be offensive if someone wrote a letter to me and said, hey, you know, I know that you're an exile where you live. I'd be like, what? No, I'm not. I'm local. I'm from here, right? And that's this weird thing that we can miss in this introduction to the letter, is that Peter's saying to these guys, hey, I know that you're from there, but you're not really from there. That's not your home. When you're a Christian, nowhere on earth is like your real home. It's a weird thing. I'll give you a couple other verses to help this make sense. In Hebrews 13, we see this in verse 14. It says, for here on earth we have no lasting city, but we seek a city that is to come. In Hebrews 11, we see this. It says that these heroes of faith, they all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar. Listen, it says that they acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. Like on the whole earth, anywhere they went, they were going to be a stranger or an exile. Didn't matter if they were born there, raised there, lived there for 20 years, whatever. No matter where we're at, we're strangers. And Peter wanted them to know this. Hey, where you're from isn't actually your home. He carries on in chapter 2 of 1 Peter and says, hey, beloved, I urge you, and he uses that same phrase in Hebrews, as sojourners and exiles. You know, I urge you to live differently among the people that you're around, right? He's saying, hey, watch how you talk when you're around the Gentiles. But the thing is that these guys he was writing to were the Gentiles. I mean, I'm trying to like help this make sense. Like when you go travel to another country. So I ran through a couple of words with Vic. Hey, I just want to make sure I don't like, you know, really stick my foot in it and say something I shouldn't say, you know, on the microphone. You know, I don't want to be, you know, offensive, and I don't want to use, so what words are bad words here that I mean, you expect that when you go to another country. I remember we were leading the team to South Africa, and this South African lady, apparently you can't say, I'll spell the word out for you. So this South African lady came, she got with her team, she said, there's just one thing I want to tell you, just one thing, gather in close. She had the whole team huddle in, she leaned in and whispered, she's like, you, whatever you do, mustn't say C-R-A. And I remember this one kid goes, did she just spell crap? Like she was, it was so hard for her to imagine us saying that in South Africa that she had to spell it and whisper it, you know? You kind of take that on, like, okay, fair enough. It's not a bad word to me, but apparently it's a bad word to you. I get it, right? But it's like, imagine someone saying, hey, we don't talk like that here. And you're like, who's we? Because I'm we, because I'm from here, right? This is my place, right? That's what's going on here. It's like, hey, Gentiles, watch how you talk among the Gentiles. I'm like, wait a second, that's us. This is us. But what Peter's saying is, hey, it's different for you now. It's different. You're a stranger now in this world that you're from. You've something's different about you, right? This ultimate place of where you're from is, and where you're looking forward to is not where you're at right now. So many Christians don't really understand this, and so it makes following Jesus really hard on us because we don't understand how to live like that, and I think it makes it really confusing for people who are friends with us or watching us around us. So I think this is a really helpful thing for us to try to understand and consider. Until Jesus comes back, we are meant to live as strangers wherever we are, and it's going to take intentionality to work this stuff out, to figure out how to live, to figure out how to act, and all the rest. Now, the thing about strangers is that we're strange. Straight out the gates, I know I'm strange to you. I'm okay with that. I'm trying to mitigate a lot of that. I'm not here to tell you to, you know, build some big wall on your northern border or make Canada great again or anything like that. I'm trying to mitigate a lot of the strangeness that would come with me being American, being here. But a good stranger isn't unnecessarily strange. You know, like when you go into another country or a foreign land, you try your best to like assimilate. You try to do things that are respectful, that are culturally appropriate. I remember being on my first mission trip, and it was weird, and we were weird, and the whole thing was weird, and it was a bad experience. They made us do these bizarre like dramas where we would essentially mime. There was an era of Christianity where like miming was the thing. It's an embarrassing thing. I'm really glad, so glad that smartphones weren't around, that YouTube wasn't around, that there's no chance you're gonna watch a video of me miming in Trinidad, but I did. And so we would wear these bizarre costumes, you know, like, I mean, just ridiculous. No one would ever wear this stuff. But we were doing this mime for Jesus. And I remember my first mission trip, I'd never been on a plane. My first mission trip was to Trinidad in August. It was like the scorching face of the sun. It was so hot, right? And so we would do this drama like 4 to 5 times a day outside. And they did not let us shower for the 2 weeks we were there. And they did not let us wash our clothes. This organization that we had come over with from America. Somehow, this is for us to identify with the people or something. So let's dress like the craziest people you've ever seen. And let's not shower for 2 weeks or wash our clothes. I mean, I was gagging just putting my shirt on every day to go out and do this drama for Jesus. It was terrible. And we would go, and I remember one time we went into like an amazing mall, like state-of-the-art, way better than anything we had in where I was from. We went to this mall in Trinidad. It was like epic, air-conditioned, nice stores, smelled like so good. And there we were. It was like late in the trip, so we were ripe. You know, we rolled in there. And there we are doing our drama and our mime and all this stuff. And it's like, I remember like the people from Trinidad just staring in like disgust, like hiding their children's eyes. I mean, like, it wasn't the gospel that was offensive. It was us. We smelled and looked horrible. Like it. And I remember thinking as a teenager on my first mission trip, like, man, is this, I'm not an expert in my first trip, but is this really the best way to show these people Jesus? I mean, really, this is it? This is what we raised, like $3,000 a piece to come do, right? This is it? And what Peter's talking about here when he says that we're, you know, we're strangers, we're exiles, he's not saying that we should go out of our way to be extra weird. He's acknowledging that we're different, but it's not encouraging us to make it weirder than we have to make it. And I think this is an important point. And I think we're sort of growing out of some of this era of Christianity, but man, it was like we specialized in being weird for a long time. It was like, we wanted to make it as weird as possible And we wore it as like a badge of honor that people thought we were nuts. So I think it's just important to recognize here that that's not necessarily what I think we see advocated in the Bible. We already believe a lot of weird stuff. We believe that the sinless Son of God, born of a virgin, came and lived a perfect life in our place before he was willing to die a sin-atoning, sacrificial death in our place. Oh, and then he rose from the dead. Oh, by the way, he'll be back. When? I don't know. He'll be back. When he comes back, though, you know what he's going to do? He's going to judge the living and the dead. Yep. And then he's gonna make it so that there's never sadness or sin or anything ever again. He's gonna fix all that. And right now, because of all that, you know, thousands of years ago, what's gonna happen? Who knows when? We're gonna say no to sin, and we're gonna stand up against injustice everywhere, and we're gonna choose to forgive, and we're sinned against, and all the rest. You know, because of what he did thousands of years ago, because of what God decided he would do before the foundations of the earth. But you know, because of this thing that will happen one day. I mean, all that right there, that we're like, yeah. All that's weird. All that's plenty weird, right? If you're not a Christian, that all that right there, that whole big chunk of things that we say like, oh yeah, of course, that's weird. It's plenty weird enough. We don't have to stop showering and start miming in the street. Like it's already hard enough. We don't have to make it harder. And so I think of what Paul said in 2 Corinthians 6:3. He said, hey, when we think about how we do our ministry, he says, we put no obstacle in anyone's way. It's like this park run, you know, that you guys help participate in, which I would encourage any of you who want to jump in and join Vic and the team. It's a real great opportunity, and they need help. So imagine that, like, you know, it's like, okay, you show up, and you say, hey, I want to help. And they say, cool. Vic says, here's what I'd like you to do. Hide in this bush around this one corner, and when the runners come, just kind of stick your leg out, you know? It's this little thing we do, you know, just makes it extra hard for the runners. Like, I don't think this is a good idea. You know, oh, yeah, it's a great idea. And then, you know, then there's this one spot where we swing a board out from behind a tree as the children run by. Like, you think, gosh, that doesn't feel kind. You know, I think the goal is just to get them down the race. In fact, Vic went out of his way to say, hey, if you're new, if it's the first time, come here, I want to talk to you. Look, here, there's this turn, watch out for this thing, right? It's like we're going out of our way to help them make it the whole way. And that's the language Paul uses. He's like, we don't put any obstacle in anyone's way. It's already hard enough. We're not going to try to make it so hard that they trip before they ever get to Jesus, because we're smelly and miming in the street. If you're here and you're not yet a Christian, man, we want to try every single week, every single conversation, to make it as clear as possible who Jesus is and what this is all about. It's going to take a miracle for you to believe all the stuff that we believe. It took a miracle for us to believe it, you know? But we don't want to make it extra weird. We don't make it extra hard. And so if you're kind of in that, like you're coming out of that era of Christianity where it was like, let's be weird for Jesus, I would encourage you to just have a relook at that. And, you know, just focus on the fact that there's already plenty of things. And I don't have a list of people to awkwardly stare at. So if that's you, I'm sorry. But, you know, yeah. So here's the thing too, though, as you start following Jesus, you know, getting down the road and following Jesus, you accumulate other things to the list of what it means to be a Christian. And Christianity can become, especially if you've been around a long time, what makes you a Christian can become the meetings you go to. What does it mean to be a Christian? Oh, we go to church on Sunday, every Sunday, even when it rains, you know? Or it can become like, what makes you a Christian? Why are you a Christian? Oh, I don't drink, cuss, or chew, or go with girls who do, and that's what makes me, you know, a Christian. You know, it becomes those types of things, you know? And I would just say that the strangeness of Christianity isn't first that we go to meetings like this, or that we don't do certain things that everyone else thinks is totally normal. That's not the first thing that's not the most important thing that's strange about us. I think what makes what should really be the strangest thing is the thing that we hope in the most. When people say, hey, what does it mean to be a Christian? What they should find strange is where we get our hope, right? It says this in 1 Peter, this is what we read earlier. He's caused you to be born again into a living hope, and that's what should make us strange. Is this strange new hope that we have. You know, not that, you know, we buy all of our groceries from a Christian bookstore and, you know, all that kind of, like, what should make us strange is the strange new hope. That's why we live strange, because this hope we have. We see some phrases here that are strange things, but they become so normal to us that we forget that they're beautifully strange. Things like, he says, you've been born again. That's a strange thing, but it's beautiful. It's just, you know, I don't know what it would, like, I don't know how you feel about your past, but I have a lot of regret. One of the hardest things about, I started a church in my hometown, which means that, like, I've had to say some pretty awkward, I'm really sorry's a whole lot for stuff I did growing up. I am, like, on the regular reminded of just really horrible, hateful, just not great things I did, you know, growing up. And I made a lot of mistakes. I continue to make a lot of mistakes. This thing that we've been born again, like, imagine, like, that, getting, like, that kind of start over, you know, like, where it's like you now, and maybe you came from a good family, or I came from a really hard family situation. Dad went to prison, brother was a drug addict, all of that. I mean, I am now, like, part of this, like the family of God. Like, it's just an amazing thing. So just right away, you start to see this hope is really strange and different. But then he gives us some of the reasons that this hope is so strange. This is what we put our hope in. First, he says it's a sure and it's a final hope. It's a sure and a final hope. When we say hope, we usually say, it's like, I hope so. That's what we say a lot. And what we mean by that is, like, fingers crossed, I really hope so. I hope so-and-so wins. I hope so-and-so loses. I hope so-and-so gets elected. I hope this meal is great. I hope, you know. But the Bible doesn't mean hope like that. It doesn't mean kind of like a flippant, I hope so. From the Bible standpoint, hope is this absolute assurance. It's always connected to the final victory of God in this world and in our lives. That's what, like, hope means. From the Bible standpoint, hope is something you bank on because it's connected to who God is, his character, and his love. Hebrews 6 says we have this as a sure and steadfast anchor for our soul, a hope, right? It connects hope to this idea of being a really strong anchor. Like I said, I live on an island. I go offshore spearfishing and stuff a lot. That's what I do. And man, anchors are really important. We got into a situation last year. We were like 30 or 40 miles offshore coming back. We had wasted a lot of gas outrunning, like, really big thunderstorms, like, way offshore. And the sea had gotten really rough. And on our way back, we ran out of gas in this boat. And we were a long way out, you know. And there's a dangerous shoal that runs, like, way offshore off this one end of our island. Where we live, it's called the Graveyard of the Atlantic because there's thousands of shipwrecks, literally thousands. And so you kind of always have it in the back of your head, you know, like, hey, you know, lots of people have made mistakes here. Even though I'm from here, you got to be careful. So on our way back, we're in this boat. We run out of gas. There's storms everywhere. And there's this shoal. We can see it in the distance. And you can see this huge waves breaking all over it. All we had was the anchor. That's all we had. And at that point in time, you're like, this better be a good anchor, you know? And I've been in a lot of situations where the anchor wasn't good and where it wouldn't set and it wouldn't hold. And that can get really scary really quick, you know? And so Hebrews says that this hope we have isn't like, well, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed God will come through. No, he says it's like an anchor that's sure and steadfast. It's not moving. It sticks and it's not going anywhere. That's what this hope's like. Well, how do you know, Peter? I saw him raised from the dead. Does that count? You know, like, that's what this guy would say. So there's this steadfastness to our hope. And then he goes on and says that actually this hope is also imperishable and it's undefiled and it's unfading. And what he's saying is, hey, this hope, it's better than anything on the planet. Everything on the planet is perishable. It's fading. It wears out fast. And I think sometimes those of us who are Christians, we treat, you know, kind of like we treat Christianity like a person who gets married and, like, regrets it. Here's what I mean. It's like someone might say, hey, do you want to go to this party? No, I can't. Old ball and chain, Jesus, you know. I could ask him, but I know what he'll say. No. So What am I going to do? I said, yes. Have fun, though, for me. You know? That's like how we treat Christianity. Like, somehow, we're now stuck in this really unhappy relationship and we can't have any fun anymore, right? And actually, Peter's saying, no, this hope is better than anything on the planet. What we get now is way better. Jesus is describing it as like the modern-day version of winning the lottery. You know, it's like you find this thing, you're like, I'm going to sell everything I got to get that, you know? I remember when I got my first iPhone, I guarded it like it was a Fabergé egg. I thought, here, basically, there's no difference between me and a famous rapper now. I am Drake. I am. What could me and him not have in common now? You know, you were just like, it's so precious, you didn't want to touch it. Just hold it, you know? And now that phone is used by my kids as a toy. That thing that I was like, it's so precious. You know, it's now like this just little, I don't know where it is, to be honest. I mean, they could have fed it to our dog. I have no idea. It's interesting, though, you know, how your perspective changes. And the stuff that, like, was really precious to us, when we really understand, like, what we've got in Jesus, we start going like, I mean, I don't know, the dog maybe ate it. I don't know. It doesn't, it's like you lose that. Our greatest hope isn't found in, you know, in fulfillment. And you're like, oh, if I could just get everything on my Amazon wish list, it's all junk. In comparison to him, it's all junk. No one satisfies but him. One of the church fathers, Augustine, said this, our souls are restless until they find their rest in him. This inheritance, Peter says, is imperishable. It's undefiled. It's unfading. There's nothing like it. He goes on and says that this hope is so strange because it endures even through suffering and death. Even through suffering and death. We've just been hit by another hurricane, devastated the island next to us, and really, it's going to be years and years and years before it's back to normal. But this hope we have in Jesus holds up even through all of that. Holds up through really sad medical diagnosis and holds up through heartache and tragedy. Holds up. It can endure even through suffering and death. Peter was speaking to a group of Christians that would have faced pretty intense persecution. A lot of these guys would have even been murdered for their belief in Jesus. Peter himself, history tells us, was. And maybe that's not the case for us right now, but for all of us, there is a sense in which we're grieved by trials. We're grieved by this living out our Christianity, and you know, you can feel a sense, you feel odd and rejected and all the rest. And what, like, Peter calls us to do is, even now with these little trials, it says, in this you rejoice, though, for a little while. What he calls us to do is just to see all of these trials as temporary. And when you're in it, it doesn't feel like a little while, does it? It feels like, oh my God, it's never going to end. And Peter's like, it's just a little while. Just a little while. Just hang in there. This hope can endure through all of that. And what's coming far outweighs the pain and the suffering we have now. But sometimes you and I are going to be discouraged, and sometimes we're going to feel like life is so unfair, and this is so unfair, and this exile is so unfair, and I wish I wasn't having to have that conversation again. I wish I wasn't having to think through how to explain that to my kid again. I wish I wasn't thinking about how to, like, sometimes you're going to feel like that. And I want to say, like, man, in those moments, those are real feelings. I think that's another opportunity to live this passage out, which is where we get to really identify with the suffering of Jesus. You know, concerning the salvation, Peter says, the sufferings of Christ he talks about. This is reminding us that our hope is strengthened when we remember Jesus. The get-rich-quick Christianity message that was so popular for so long, it just doesn't hold up. But the real message of Christianity, which is we can identify with the sufferings of Jesus, that is tried and true. We do suffer. We do have hard things that we go through. But in those moments, we get to remember what Jesus went through for us. Seems weird that we'd want to identify with sufferings. I wondered about that verse for a long time. And then I was thinking about a friend of mine who got cancer, and their spouse, when they got cancer and lost their hair from the chemo, their spouse shaved their head, shaved his head. And you think that's an odd thing to do. You know, I mean, you're not the one with cancer. You're not the one on chemo. You're not the one whose hair is falling out. What was the spouse doing? He was saying, hey, I want to identify with the suffering that you're going through. I'm proud. I'm proud to be your spouse. I'm proud to, this is such a small little thing. My hair will grow right back. I don't actually have cancer, but I'm really proud to get to stand with you and to suffer alongside you in any little way, shape, or form, right? And I think there's something about that with following Jesus. It's like, he died in our place. He was rejected and murdered, beaten, spit on for us. And like sometimes like any little wave of trouble, we're like, we're out. I thought I was living my best life now, and that's not happened. I got a license plate that says hashtag blessed. I don't know what's going on here. What could I have done different? I paid my tithes. You know, where's my new car? Like, it's like we have no bandwidth for suffering for him. We have no bandwidth for enduring any kind of suffering at all. We're out. Instead of being like, hey, man, it's actually a privilege. I mean, you know, Jesus, I can never come close to repaying you. How could I ever do that? But you know what? It's okay every now and again to suffer. It just helps me remember what you did for me, you know? There's just something to that, guys. And then last thing is that this living hope should cause us to live on mission while we're in exile. And what we mean by that, if you're new to that, is we should live, like we said at the beginning, we don't just care about pulling off good Sunday mornings. We actually want to see our city get better. If you're new to this church doesn't just exist to do this on a Sunday morning. It exists because it wants Ajax and Pickering and the surrounding areas to be better. Being in exile doesn't mean we live in a way where we try to escape the world. And that happened too for the last kind of 20 or 30 years. We built little Christian bubbles. We had Christian amusement parks and Christian bookstores and Christian grocery stores and Christian whatever. We had this little world we tried to live in, you know? Do you guys have Pizza Hut up here? It's terrible everywhere, but I just, it's my analogy I just thought of. I remember when I was a Christian, you know, younger, I remember going to a Pizza Hut and some country music came on and I got up and ran out with this, because I was going to just live for Jesus and we can't listen to Garth Brooks, you know, and it's just this really silly way of living, you know? Or you live in such a way where you try to escape the exile that you're in. And actually, the best thing to do is to see yourself as being sent into exile, you know, to make a difference. We haven't been left here. You know, the Bible says, Acts 17, that the reason you live where you live right now is because God wanted you to. It says, before time, God predestined that you and I would live where we live. He wanted you here right now. This is where he wants you. And so we're not to see ourselves as left here. When's God going to get me out of this hellhole? I mean, that's what a lot of Christianity has looked like for decades. Man, when's Jesus going to come back? I can't stand it anymore. We've not been left here like Jesus forgot us. And we've been sent here with a purpose to make a difference. Jeremiah 29, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to the exiles whom I have sent into exile. It would have been hard to hear that. Let me get this straight. We're here because you wanted us here? Yeah. And he tells them to build houses and plant gardens and eat produce and get married and have grandkids and dig in deep and seek the welfare of the city where he sent them into exile. It doesn't say build little bubbles and try really hard not to say any bad words and I'll be back soon. And don't get yourself dirty with all the sinners out there. No, he says, get involved. Jump in. Plan park runs and help addicts and buy groceries and build houses and meet your neighbors and jump in, get in, dig in, live as people who've not been left but people who've been sent. I don't know, again, where you're all at with Jesus, but as we come to a close, if you're here and you're not yet a Christian, I mean, I would just say, and I'm sure you've heard this maybe before if you've been here, you know, but all of us are putting our hope in something. You know, this is all about this, strange hope that we have. All of us are putting our hope in something as people. And the Bible says that when hope, you know, gets deferred, when hope, doesn't come through, it says this really powerful thing. It says it makes our heart sick. I don't know if you've ever like hoped you would get a job that you didn't get, or hoped you would get into a relationship that you didn't get, or hoped that, you know, like that, when that hope kind of lets you down, it makes your heart sick. And what the Bible's trying to tell us is that everything under the sun that we put our hope in is going to disappoint us and make our hearts sick. An author named C.S. Lewis, he says, if you don't want to get your heart broke, don't even get a dog, you know, because eventually the dog will die and you'll be sad, you know. You have to live in a really hard, calloused, cold, small existence to not get your heart broke. Everything under the sun is going to let you down, you know. And so what the Bible's calling us to do is to put our hope in something bigger and something more, and that is it's in God himself. He doesn't invite us to vague spirituality. He says, come to me. I'm not going to let you down. And so I don't know where you're at on your journey of checking out Christianity, but I'm going to tell you it's not about learn a few tricks, how to be a better version of yourself and how you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps and stop that habit and start a new positive habit. It's not about that, first and foremost. It's about your soul finding rest. It's about you finding a living hope that's different than anything else in the world. Finally, you find something where you're never going to be let down. And if you've got questions about that, we'd love to talk to you more about that. And then for the rest of us who are already Christians, man, I bet some of us have drifted away, and maybe realize this listening this morning, we've drifted away from finding our hope in him. Maybe it's like still in him, kind of, especially on Sunday mornings, maybe on Wednesday nights, but like, throughout the week, we're finding our hope in all kinds of other things. You know that when, like, those little things start to, like, crumble or crack, or the car breaks down, or the relationship hits a rocky spot. You know that you've put your hope in it when you start to feel devastated because of that. My brother is a recovering heroin addict. This summer, he celebrated 2 years of sobriety after 20 years of not having 2 minutes of sobriety. And I was a big part of that. You know, I was the guy who got him arrested. I was the guy who was there at court to talk him into sending him to rehab. I took him to rehab. I was there through all of it. This last week, he had a really tough moment where he started really threatening to just go relapse. And I realized in that moment that I wasn't just sad. I was devastated in an unhelpful way, like in a way where like I had started to like hope in his sobriety, because him being sober has made my life better. My life was hell for the last 20 years with him as a heroin addict. And the thought of him back on heroin, man, you know, it's like I'd put hope on that in the wrong way, you know? And so I don't know if that's you this morning on some stuff, but man, my hope for you this morning would be that you can realign your hope back onto what really matters. And maybe for some of you too, this last thing is that you've just lived like you've been left behind. Such a terrible thing altogether, but you know, just like, man, when's Jesus going to come back and get me? Because I can't believe he left me here this long, and I'm just ready to be out of here. And actually, like, you've not been left, you've been sent, and like, man, you just need to like come to terms with that and live differently, because all around you are people who need Jesus. You know, all around you is a city that needs Jesus. And you're here right now because God wants you here to do something about it. And I just would encourage you, if that's you, just to put your yes on the table this morning. I don't know what that means. I don't know where to start. It starts by just putting your yes on the table and saying, all right, Jesus, I want to live like someone who's been sent, not someone who's been left. And God will make it clear from there. Let me pray for us. Lord, thank you for your goodness and your mercy and your love. Thank you for this incredible church and this incredible place. A city that you love, you know. Just was reminded recently that, I mean, the Bible says you know every tear that's being shed all across Ajax and Pickering and beyond and Toronto, and you know the hairs on everyone's head, and you don't know that stuff just because you collect knowledge and data and you're really into numbers. You know it because you care, because it matters to you that there are broken marriages and hurting single people who feel less than human because they're single, and little kids who go to bed every night hearing their parents scream and shout, and worse, and addicts who don't know that there's ever going to be any hope for them, and so on and so on and so on and so on all around us. You see it, and you care, And you've given us a strange new hope, that just unshakable hope in you, but you don't want us to keep it to ourselves. You want us to actually live in such a way where we put this hope on display, and so that this community can be better. And so I pray that you would do that more and more. You would bless this church more and more. You'd use them more and more. That every idea they have to be a blessing to the city, things like this park run, that you would just bless it. You would just use it. All kinds of ideas, that a year from now they have a big old list of all the things that you're using them as a church to do, to be a blessing to this city. And we ask all this in your name, Jesus. Amen.